Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types from a left-wing perspective. This is actually take two. We have a huge roundtable tonight. Everybody is live and in person here in the basement of Casa Hutchison, our secret bunker, to save us from the coming minions.
Yes.
We're going to just go around and introduce ourselves. Of course, I am Travis.
I'm Rachel.
This is JC.
I'm Molly.
It's Sarah Burris with a cold.
And Lindsay Hayes.
Dana.
And Brenna.
Yeah, JC is, of course, Jermaine, who's been on our podcast before. Sarah Burris, of course, is in town.
Woo! From D.C.?
Of rawstory.com, although she's been off the clock the last 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
Fighting a cold and just kind of getting off the grid, which she deserved.
Having a vacation, too. I mean, yeah. So I haven't been off. I haven't had off time since May. For my birthday, I took off a week and went to the beach. Yeah. And this is the first time I've taken off, and it's been awesome.
How long did you take off?
3 days.
Oh, wow. Treat yourself.
You know, right?
3 days.
My boss goes out of town tomorrow, so I can't be gone when she's gone at the same time. Yeah, yeah. So,
but you did travel, and you are here in Colorado from D.C., and what have you been doing since you've been here?
I did an aerial dance class.
Yes.
Nice.
And flew through the air on beautiful ribbons, and which means I can't put my arms behind my back right now.
Right.
So you can technically perform in Cirque du Soleil now.
Yeah.
I could think about it.
You couldn't fully understand how hard it is.
Oh, I knew that before. I mean, yeah. Those people look amazing. So, yeah, yeah. And that has to take some serious effort.
But have you had fun in our Mile High
School? Yes. Good. It's beautiful. I mean,
yeah,
it's amazing.
You know, it just started getting cold a couple days ago.
It did.
Yeah.
Fortunately.
Insane and for this time of year.
And yeah. It was 71 degrees in Washington today.
Jeez.
Wow.
Wow.
Well, there's that. So anyway, there's stuff to talk about.
And we got to fill Sarah in on what the fuck's been going on in the world.
Fucking Sarah Palin. That's all I know.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, we were talking about this on our first take. But Sarah Palin just keeps getting these news stories about how she's going to be the new secretary of this and that. And I have an opinion that it's...
We'll talk about what they're floating her for now.
Well, yeah, right now it's Veterans Affairs.
Yeah.
Which makes total sense.
Before it was Secretary of the Interior.
It was Interior, it was Education for a while, it was HHS. I think it's not real. I think that, you know, just like people make it up and then everyone picks up on it because everyone hates her so much that it's like, oh, can you imagine? Like, people just pick the word. Like,
do conservatives like
the,
even like
the
her
Mike
anymore?
Huckabee no. was going to be the to ambassador to Israel and everyone was like freaking out. And it's like, that's so absurd that we want to believe it.
Well,
it's Trump,
it's
but
a
like,
distraction.
Well, and it's not all good.
But I don't think it's being leaked from the administration, I think that people are just making shit up.
A lot of
it's
it is
the fake news sites.
Yes.
Who's making it up?
No fake news sites.
We'll get to that.
But a lot of it also is coming from the transition team where they say, like, she's on the short list for blank. And then everyone says, like, could you imagine? And then it runs with she's being floated as.
Speaking of the transition team, I think it's really interesting to talk about what happened on the Sunday news program with Kellyanne Conway.
Yes.
I don't know if you all caught that.
Yes.
No.
Yeah, the
no.
Mitt Romney thing.
No,
so Kellyanne Conway basically went on the Sunday show, and I don't know which one because I don't watch them.
I think
but
it was MTP.
MTP. Yeah. And basically stated that Mitt Romney had betrayed Trump and was not a good choice, and Trump apparently was furious. Who knows if this is actually true.
She went on a tear. She wasn't just a one-off, one-sentence thing about Mitt Romney being a traitor to the party. Like, she went on a tear.
Like, I was offline and even I saw that.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting just to, like, is there really dissension going on in the ranks? Is this all for publicity? Is this all a distraction? I mean, I think there's a lot of debate on that.
Is she pissed that, like, she ran the campaign and got him the job and she's not having a greater role in the administration, or
I have no
I don't
idea.
Know.
I mean, considering how much she's been on stuff, I mean, my speculation a long time ago before they even put out shortlists was I figured she would be the press secretary just because she's been, you know, the mouthpiece for so long.
Right.
That maybe if she's not even been floated for that, she might be raging against the machine a little bit.
I hope the press guy is Boris. What's his name?
The weird looking
Boris Epstein.
Sweaty dude.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That would be amazing.
I want Katrina back. I miss Katrina.
Oh, God. Katrina.
Oh, that would be amazing. Could you imagine her handling a press pool? That would be incredible.
Oh, it'd be so good.
Anderson and AJ Delgado will get their own show on CNN for daily tips.
Yes, that's correct.
Who's the one? Oh, Amara, what is her name? The
Omarosa.
Yeah.
The literal reality tip.
Yes.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is it seems like, and I think lots of other people have mentioned this before, but it seems like he really is running this thing a lot like an episode of The Apprentice.
Yeah,
of course.
Like,
absolutely.
It's the only way he knows how to run things, and so it's, you know,
people get pulled into Trump Tower and
he floats things and says, here's your challenge, you've got to write a jingle for
whoever kisses my butt.
I hope he runs the White House like that, like a retarded Frank Underwood.
It would be...
Please no.
I would prefer a retarded Frank
also,
Underwood.
Also, we don't use the word retarded in this house ever, so...
But we're talking about Trump.
No, we still can't use that word.
But the fact that he went from... I mean, they were floating Mitt Romney was this whole thing, and then all of a sudden, David Petraeus...
That's what I was going to mention.
That is so absurd.
I mean, although sex scandals don't seem to mean much.
It's not
to Republicans.
Not
to Republicans.
It's not
the sex scandal that's the scandal. It's the leaked information.
I mean, you have no leg to stand on with criticizing Hillary Clinton for... all of her emails
Unintentionally maybe sending later classified emails through a private server to literally giving your mistress classified information because you want to get laid. That's a whole other level of leaked classified information.
Also, that's not even sexy.
No, it's not.
Well, it depends what was in the leaked info.
Yeah, it really does.
I don't want to know about anything about Petraeus' leaks.
Yeah.
Well, I want to know what his nickname in the Trump White House will be. Will it be like Lion Ted and Sneaky Petraeus, or Leaky Petraeus?
That's good.
I like Leaky Petraeus.
Leaky Petraeus. Just Leaky, because
that sounds like a drag name.
That would be what G-Dub would call him.
Yeah, that'd be his nickname. Yeah.
It would just be Leaky.
Yeah.
But seriously, though, I think we know somebody who is actually going to be nominated for a spot, and that's Tom Price.
For HHS.
Yeah, we can talk about that one.
I mean, just absolutely outrageous. I mean, to go from Kathleen Sebelius, to had to resign over the shitty Obamacare website, who was just running that department.
Not her fault at all.
And she was running that department insanely well. We made so many great strides. And now we're going to go with Price. Like... You've got to be kidding me.
I think there is something to be said about the distractions happening with all of the different floating of all these names and the reality show environment, but the real impact of the policies that these individuals are proposing is terrifying.
Absolutely.
I mean, they're talking about block granting Medicaid to the states, which would have an extremely negative impact on especially, you know, people of color, people who have mental health issues, elderly, people who need nursing home care. I mean, the impacts would just be far and wide.
Can you explain block care to the states?
Block granting?
Like, block.
Yeah, so as of right now, Medicaid is so states contract with the federal government to provide Medicaid services. And under Obamacare, that was expanded greatly. And so people in states that chose to accept the Medicaid expansion provided Medicaid services. And that covers a wide variety of things.
Yeah. Here in Colorado, it was very successful.
It's very successful. We've had high enrollment, lower costs of care, and, you know, mental health coverage, medication coverage, all kinds of things that people who are in that gap, right, who don't make enough to afford private insurance, but make too much to be able to really qualify for, like, SSI, they can afford Medicaid, or they can are eligible for Medicaid. And it also applies to single individuals over the age of 18, which before it didn't. And so I think what block granting is taking a chunk of money, giving it to the states, and letting the states design their own Medicaid program however they see fit. And in Indiana, how that turned out is that each person who was eligible for Medicaid had to pay a monthly fee to get their Medicaid coverage. And if they missed a month's payment, they were kicked off the rolls for 8 months.
What the fuck?
That was what happened in Indiana.
How does that not defeat the entire purpose?
Because it was a cost-cutting measure and a cost-saving measure. But really, I mean, it depends on what your purpose is. Is your purpose to save money or save lives?
Right.
And if your purpose is to save money, that's a great way to do it because you're punishing poor people for needing to have Medicaid. So if they missed a payment, and I mean, if you think about people who are mentally ill or
transient,
mm-hmm. I mean, it's practically impossible for them to even keep an address, let alone make a monthly payment towards towards their right. health insurance. And it's penny wise and pound foolish, as all of these policies are.
Right.
Well, and this is what happens if you have...
Were they flat or based on...
No, they were based on income, but every single person, regardless of income, has a fee.
And so it has to be paid, like, you know,
it has to be paid monthly.
Sort of, you can't, yeah. So you have to have some sort of financial institution.
Yeah.
Address, so they, a way to get to a place to pay, to pay it. Even if you have cash because you panhandled for your Medicaid money, you have to have a way to get to the place
That's
to
right.
pay it. I mean, it's an absolutely absurd system.
I'm sorry, Sarah, you were going to say?
But this is what happens whenever you have a majority of the electorate who think that they want to get the government out of their Medicaid.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Medicare. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, how can you get the government out of your Medicaid and Medicare?
They don't know that. Well, I think they do.
They literally don't.
They don't.
In Kentucky, Mitch McConnell, Connect, it's called KYN.
Yeah, yeah, I remember where they set it up.
But what it's based off is the expansion of the ACA, Obamacare.
Yeah.
But Mitch McConnell literally told them, it's not Obamacare, it's something different.
Yep.
So we're going to get rid of Obamacare, but keep your Connect, which is literally impossible.
It is the state exchange set up under the ACA.
Yeah.
So
if you get rid of the ACA, it doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist.
Oh, and Tom Price came out with a clarification on the pre-existing condition clause that everybody's been saying, oh, we're going to keep that, but get rid of the mandate. Yeah. If you lapse your insurance, for more than 6 months, if your insurance lapses because, say, you can't afford the $800 premium that the insurance companies are going to raise it to, the pre-existing condition clause goes back into effect.
That's absolutely
good. Oh, good.
Ridiculous.
So that's
barbaric.
Great.
18 months. Actually, it was 18 months.
So the question now is, are these angry white folks going to show up to these town halls frothing and screaming and losing their mind
after it's too late,
over
though,
really possibly losing their insurance rather than fake death panels? And
yep.
They're going to do that,
so.
But they're going to do it after it's too late. These policies have already been enacted, and they've lost their insurance, and they've lost the opportunity to have that input to their local government because they assume Trump's going to make America great, so I'm just going to be fine.
Well,
and then in 2 years, they're going to have no insurance and not be able to apply for insurance, not have Medicare. Pre-existing conditions, and they're going to go, what the fuck happened? And we're going to go,
what happens when you do this.
You've absolutely got to take into account the fact that what everyone's going to say is, this is the position Obama put you in. We're trying to make it better.
Yep.
That's how it's going to be spun.
They'll always spin it that way.
It'll be framed that way, absolutely.
Right. So are they still talking about vouchers, too?
For Medicare, yes. Yeah, they're still talking about turning Medicare into a voucher system whereby they would give each individual a stipend, and that person would then go on the open market and try to purchase insurance.
Well, shouldn't Democrats...
And without protections against pre-existing...
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry, what did you say? I didn't hear you.
I was asking for clarification.
Oh.
Well, I mean, shouldn't Democrats right now be spelling this out like we are?
Oh, my God.
Should be.
But
I'm very frustrated with Democrats.
No, this has been the problem with Obamacare since the very beginning, is Democrats have not properly explained what the fuck it is and why it's good. And we're now coming to a point where we're like, okay, it's going away. You guys are going to miss this. You guys are going to miss that. And they're like, what? That's just a part of insurance. And you're like, no, motherfuckers, it's not. This is a part of Obamacare. You didn't have this before, and you're not going to have it again. And the missing link that you don't have is Obamacare.
Well,
so it's always been our problem as explanation. But the interesting thing about doing a stipend is, okay, how much money is that going to be? And if the protections of Obamacare go away and they try to go in the private market with this government money, can they even get insurance if they have pre-existing conditions? Can they afford it with the stipend?
Nope.
I mean, it's absurd.
Well, and it's paid out at the end. The way I heard it explained was it's paid out at the end of the year.
Oh, you get reimbursed?
So, yeah.
Wow, so that's
true. You've got to pack it up front.
Come on.
Oh.
Come on.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen.
No,
we're going to have seniors eating cat food and dying on the streets like we did
absolutely.
In the 30s, which is how the New Deal came about in the first place.
Yeah.
So let's just go back. That's great.
No, I guess we'll get there eventually at the cost of hundreds of thousands of dead people. But.
Yeah, we will.
Well, then,
God.
Rachel, there's something I wanted to touch on based on what you had just said, which is about people not really understanding what the hell the ACA is.
Yeah.
And I know there were a lot of late night pieces or, funny pieces of people, and whether they were intended to be funny or not, of people saying, like, what do you think of Obamacare? And they're like, I fucking hate it. And you're like, what do you think of the Affordable Care Act? And they'd be like, tell me more. And then, and then you tell them the provisions of it, and then they're like, oh, yeah, I'm totally for all those things.
Of course,
And I think a big part of where that came from, A, the branding of Obamacare, I think, was probably a misstep on the Democrat side to allow that nickname to take hold. They didn't brand it that way. But in order for them to allow it to take hold, I think that that might have been a small misstep just because of the hatred of Obama that, you know, you could have branded it the Affordable Care Act and not had his name in it and people who just automatically shudder.
Yeah, but Rush Limbaugh would have said Obamacare. Yeah,
that's right.
But what I'm saying is the misstep is that
we go back to Hillary Care.
Right.
And what they did there was they tried to run away from Hillary Care, and I think Obama looked at Hillary Care and went, fuck it, it's Obamacare, I'm proud of it, and tried to embrace it. And I mean, I think a lot of the things that liberals have done in the last 8 years have been short-sighted, and maybe we misunderstood the people around us. But I think that that was the motive, was Hillary Care was so vile that they tried to run away from it, and it became a bad word. So we tried to make Obamacare.
Oh, yeah, we tried to own it, and I understand that. I'm just saying, hindsight being 2020, I think that maybe that might have turned people away from it a little bit. But what I wanted to really touch on is a lot of why I think a lot of people didn't like it, because when you explain the provisions that are important to people or what things actually happen, when we're talking about a 28,000-page bill that is full of legal language that is something that even the legislators didn't really read. They had to have their clerks summarize like each chapter for them so that they all knew what the provisions were. When people see something like that, they go, it's overly complicated, it's clearly too complex, it's going to mess with my life. And I want to draw an analogy to that, to what happened in Colorado politics with the abolition of slavery clause.
Yes.
For those of you that don't know, we had a ballot measure. Let me back up just a little bit. In the current Colorado Constitution, it says that slavery shall not be allowed, or indentured servitude, except for a
punishment for a crime.
And there was a ballot measure to remove that except for as a punishment for a crime and just say slavery shall not be allowed in the state.
Right. Really basic what it was trying to do.
That's what it was trying to do.
We were like, of course.
Yeah.
It
lost. But for people who didn't read the blue book, which explains like the arguments for and against, and you read it, it's like a quadruple negative in the way it was written. And it says, like, shall there be a provision
to strike
the language that says that slavery shall be allowed and add a provision that it shall not be allowed in the cases where it is currently,
and
like, I voted the wrong way at first
because I read it. It didn't stay that way because I filled out my provisional ballot, and then I was like freaking out, like, why would we put slavery in the Constitution?
Right.
Because the way that it read, it had so many double negatives.
Yeah.
The way that it read, I was like, oh, vote no.
Which
on that.
Yeah.
Well, and you're voting yes to get rid of slavery.
Right.
And like,
but
that,
I thought I was voting yes
people,
to add it.
Yeah. For a lot. I mean, a lot.
But what's really interesting about this particular ballot initiative is that there was no opposition. So there was no opposing PAC, there was no opposing party, no one opposed
it. It was actually proposed by the legislature.
Yes.
So it was a legislative measure put forth to the people because Colorado's
weird.
Because
Colorado has to have
and
a,
so we have
a,
to,
a
if
vote
if we're amending the Constitution, we have to have a vote of the people. But both houses, or both parties, recommended that this be a measure that we put to the people, and they all recommended.
So what happened is you have to put opposing arguments into the blue book.
Right.
And so, first of all, they wrote it wrong, which is part of it.
Yes.
But second of all, they wrote these arguments against it that were
because you're required to in the blue book
compelling.
Have an argument against.
They were like, look, we currently have prison labor, and prisoners have to work, and they provide service to the prison, such as cleaning and things like that, and this may have unintended consequences that would disallow that. Now, no one believed that, but they thought, we have to make something up for the blue book to say what
like
might be wrong
club.
With it.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally.
Right. They had to come up with the opposing argument.
Mm-hmm. So that is what happened. And
it failed.
Joe Salazar, who I know is a state representative, he's one of the people that was one of the original sponsors of the bill, and the referendum. he came out and said, like, okay, we totally failed. We're going to do it in real simple language next time. And it'll get passed. Like, sorry.
Actually, just because you brought it up, I want to make sure that everyone knows why that's a ridiculous argument that prison labor would not be disallowed, because that would be indentured servitude if they were forced to do it against their will. All prison labor is done voluntarily.
That's right.
Yes.
So that
correct.
You can sort take...
Of. Sort of.
Yes.
No, it is.
Absolutely.
You absolutely can say no.
You can say no and serve your entire sentence.
No.
That's
no.
The problem.
No,
it didn't.
Exactly.
That's the problem.
Right, right.
It said it could have unintended consequences. I'm doing air quotes here.
And it also, it's funny because there was literally no opposition. The opposing side of it said, while there are arguments that it may do XYZ, they also, in that part of it, said, like, however, these five states have stricken this from their language and have not had these. Like, they were like, don't worry about
it. Nobody reads that far.
We're giving you a thing, but, like, don't worry about it.
And also, it's federally illegal anyway. So it's not like we're actually saying that we're trying to get rid of something that is a potential issue.
It was highly symbolic.
Yeah, it was highly symbolic. And I heard that there were a lot of people that voted against it because they wanted to keep, history alive in the Constitution. They didn't want to strike anything. And I've heard that
argument. It's like the Confederate flag argument.
I do wonder, I mean, I consider myself to be a pretty smart person, got a couple degrees. But when I read it backwards. And I don't know how many people did that where they thought that they were voting one way, like, I'm so justified, I'm voting against this. Yeah. I'm voting against slavery, that's how it read.
I guess most people didn't read it and just said, this is some big bloated government.
Because it was shocking to me to know that slavery was in our Constitution at all.
I think that was,
I didn't realize.
I want to bring something up about that. But this is something that Dana just said that I think is interesting, that this has been something we've talked about recently, which is if we strike this from the language in our current Constitution, somehow that, like, we delete it, like, with the delete button.
Right.
So, like, we can't ever delete slavery from our history. Right, it's not possible to delete that happened. It's
Control
not possible Z. To delete the fact
Control
that...
Z. Control Z.
Right, it can just, like, Control Z that. Like, that it still exists. And so when we think about the federal Constitution and the amendments that outlawed slavery and prohibition and then outlawed or brought back alcohol and all these things, it's not like we replaced the amendments with a new one, and so, like, the history of that amendment is gone. Amending it just means that you add a new one.
Yeah.
So you're updating it to say that one is no longer valid. The history is still there. The text is still there. We still
That's
have
right.
to look at that and read that black people were 3/5 of a person and that, you know...
What, Electoral College? Did I hear that right?
Yeah. No, but, like, it's true. Like, when you amend the Constitution to make something different, you're not deleting our history because you can't ever delete the things that we've done.
Well,
but you can say, we no longer want that to be a thing that we're going to do. And so this argument about deleting our history is sort of like... It makes no sense.
Well, it's not like we're going to burn the archives either. Like, we were... Right. This was an amendment to strike that line and replace it with another line. But we'll always know that that line was there up
that
until that time.
That line will still exist
will
in that document.
Yeah.
The amendment will have it as not existing. But the original amendment will still have it.
And I think it was in the conversation that you and I were having that I was saying, like, you have to read the entire document. Like,
right.
That's a big part of all of these legal things. You hear a lot of people using a lot of legal precedent and things which are completely misplaced because they've either been overturned at a later date or something else has amended them. So, I mean, if you only read up to a certain point in the Constitution, you'd be like, okay, so alcohol's illegal in America, and women can't vote, and,
well,
like, it would make America back to make America great again. Just read the first, like, 8 pages, and we're back to where we were before.
To so. The
First and the Fourth Amendment.
Yeah.
Well, to the larger point, though, I think we're going back to the ACA and what we were talking about before, to the larger point, how do we message complex policy in a way that makes people understand what they're voting for or against? And I think that
it's tough as liberals because we try to tell the truth.
And we care about policy. And we care about policy.
We're not going to build a wall and make a Mexico pay for it.
No, we're not putting bumper sticker policies on. We're actually trying to create things that help and people. And being in policy, I work in policy, and it's complex. It's not anything you can not write that long of a document about, but how do we message it?
I wonder, though, like, you know, voter testing is a slippery slope, and, you know, people say that facetiously. I know we don't want to go there, but maybe we should think about it. I won't advocate for that at all, but I would use the tactic that the right uses to try to talk you out of abortion. Before you can vote, you got to sit through this 30-minute video.
Right? You got to look at You got some rain.
That's actually a great idea.
You have to have a policy ultrasound.
We've got a 24-hour waiting period. You have to sit down and watch this 45-minute video.
That's fantastic.
Read these pamphlets.
Sit through counseling. Have someone sit you through counseling. Yeah. Have a ultra-vaginal ultrasound.
What it is you're voting on after 24 hours.
And then you have to have a funeral. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, but you have to have somebody stick something up your twat. And then you have to be like, all right, now are you sure you want to vote that way?
I think
if you want to get rid of that right, you have to have a funeral for it.
Yeah.
That's brilliant, Jason.
No, I think I'm so down for that.
Yeah. I mean, I do think, like, we have to figure out something, though, right? Because the right has figured this out. They figured out how to brand it and how to message no.
Trump figured it out.
Trump figured it out.
No.
He did.
No. Sorry. Way before Trump. Frank Luntz.
So, yeah, I was just going to say Frank Luntz.
It was on our side now, which is funny.
No, well, like,
he
hates
Trump so much.
This
like,
was a winning anything,
since
though.
The 80s. Like,
Frank Luntz has been winning things with campaign slogans.
Think about the West Wing, right? I know y'all hate it, but whatever. It's my favorite thing on earth. And there's that, the debate, right? And CJ's talking to the crazy old Republican. They're trying to find the 10-word answer for the question, because it can't be nuanced, because the American public can't understand it. It has to be 10 words, and the Republicans can always get those 10 words because they can just have no
America
nuance
freedom.
They can say America, freedom, bald eagles, liberty, and that's it. And like, Democrats are like fighting for these 10 words to be the perfect, most eloquent 10 words,
whereas Bartlett sits there and says we're a country that's way too big for 10 words.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right. Well, actually, the guy does. But because Bartlett does so well, and he says, he becomes that arrogant guy and says, you know, anyway, I don't remember the exact quote. But anyway, it's brilliant. And what they decide in the end is, like, we don't need 10 words. I think that's wrong. I think that Republicans have been winning this branding battle for decades. And
I mean,
it's because they understand the general attention span of the American people in a way that we give more credit to. We're like, if you could just, but if we're like that annoying mansplainer.
I'm going to partially disagree, because Trump took that to a new level. And Frank Luntz did everything he could in 2008 to help John McCain win. And he did everything he could in 2012 to help Mitt Romney win. And this cycle, he was not pulling for Trump. He was doing fake focus groups and bullshit to say Jeb Bush was...
Yeah. Sure. I'm not talking about Frank Luntz. I'm talking about, policies especially.
I do want to talk about Frank Luntz.
That originated with Trump, though. I mean, like...
No,
it
didn't originate with him. But he tapped into something so base and so simple.
But it's
so
been done before. If you go back to the Southern strategy and the dog whistles, we don't have to say it all. We can just put this thing out there about state rights, and you know what the rest of it is.
No. Yeah. They got sick of that and forgot the whistle. They just wanted to
That's
hear
right.
It.
And I said the other day, I said, you whistle long and hard enough and the dogs show up. And Trump is one of the dogs that showed up. I don't think he's been whistling at all. I think he's just been saying it straight up. And what is it in that? What is that base, you know, we can talk like neuroscience, but what is that basic fear and hatred that he's tapping into?
This plain speak that they want to hear of build the wall and
Mexico's going to pay for it.
Terrorist, period.
Yeah.
Well, there is a neurological thing too, like with people who connect to fear and hate. Like that it's like whenever you eat a piece of chocolate, you know, and you get that buzz, that exciting sort of it's that same sort of thing with fear and hate for a lot of people.
I mean, marketing 101 is touch the pain points.
Right. So. Yeah. Make people feel something. And
I think that's definitely true, but I also think that there's something about speaking monosyllabically enough that everyone can understand what you're saying. Like, you can reach a lot of people, and when people say, like, he's a straight talker, you're like, no, he's not. He's saying nonsense, but he's saying one-syllable words that everyone knows what they mean.
Believe me.
And they're like, I'm going to make it great. Believe me.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah. Like,
just going back to this idea that, like, I know that we... as a party or as like a movement or whatever the left of us are, we want to explain things. We want to be the explainer in chief. We want to be the mansplainer in the room. And I think
that's why we talk for an hour every week.
And I think that in some ways, you know, I hate mansplainers because they explain to me things that I may know better than them, right? That's the definition. I think that the right viewed the left as the mansplainer this time and thought, you don't know anything. You don't know what this country is. You don't know who we are. You presume to know what we know more about, and we're going to vote against you for it. And I think, I don't think they're right, but I think we have to take a look at that and take a look at how we speak to these people and how, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you that we should listen to the poor working white man more and do more for him because fuck that. But I am saying that maybe the liberals were a little mansplaining for a long time.
That's
and
right.
Maybe we should think about the way that we message people and stop talking down and maybe start talking.
Here's one.
Yeah.
Republicans take health care, you die.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, yes. That's the kind of
death
stuff
panels.
That
is also accurate.
That's
panels.
True.
Yeah.
I mean, I think about We Are the 99%. And I'm reading a book right now called Necessary Trouble, and I want to talk about it at some point because it's fucking amazing. But she talks about that. Like, that was one of the first times that the left really had a phrase that caught on. And it caught on, and it changed the conversation across the board because it was so simple and because it was so inclusive.
And true.
And true. And, you know, 99% and 1%, that is obvious for anybody to understand. And it caught on in a way that changed the conversation about income inequality in this country.
Absolutely.
And I think we need to take that example of how that worked. Black Lives Matter is another great example. That caught on because it was so simple and it was so clear to understand what we were saying.
Well, it also
it's clear for some people.
It scared people, but they reacted to it.
But we're talking about it.
And we're talking about it.
We're talking about it before. We're not,
and it changed
it's
the
not
conversation.
Fixed, but like, we are changing the conversation.
Yeah.
I agree.
So how do we take our policy positions that are so good, that we know are good for people,
and stop mansplaining them
without
start
talking
just
down.
Saying
without
yeah.
talking down
exactly.
to people.
I think that's part of our problem is we really talk down to people and we kind of say, you know, who are these idiots voting for Trump?
That's right.
Well, I think that made them dig their heels and say, you know what? I'm not an idiot and I'm going to vote for Trump. I don't care what you say.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Well,
dig their heels in.
So like minimum wage. When people have more money, they spend more money.
Yep.
That's perfect. Great. Yeah,
but those Trump voters are also in favor of minimum wage. Of course, they're never going to get it now.
Right.
But Fight for 15. I mean, Fight for 15 has been going on now for a while. And it's slow going, but it's a thing. People know that phrase.
Well, I think it's really important when we're talking about trying to get the public behind you or voter initiatives that we actually really do work on not talking down to people and getting that messaging out there. But when we're not talking about voter initiatives, and I hate to bring Frank Luntz up again, when we're talking about things that our elected officials are voting on, the Republicans have been owning us on this forever. I mean, think about the Patriot Act.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, that is a long-ass acronym, and that dude sat for an afternoon in a room and tried to come up with some words that would spell the word patriot so that nobody could vote against it, because you voted against the
Patriot Act
right after 9/11.
Yeah. And all of their acts are
great
named
example.
That way. I mean,
I think that's getting old finally. There, people are realizing, like, the Freedom and Bald Eagles Act is something about, like, putting...
I think people are realizing, but we got a significant number of Republicans to vote for something that's close to my heart, the HOPE Act. And I think that was a great name for it. And what that particularly does is make it so that...
And Democrats are much more reticent to do that shit than Republicans.
We need to be
smarter and smugger and more, like, nuanced, so we don't need to do that.
No, but we got them to vote for something that they would never have wanted to vote for.
Or do we just overestimate the American public? Oh, they're not going to buy these dumb acronyms.
I'm talking about getting other legislators to vote for it so that you can take them on the road the next time they're being primary challenged and say, you voted against the HOPE Act, you voted against the Patriot Act, you used those
voted
terms
against the Puppies and Kittens Act.
Exactly. And like, that's some long acronym that means, I don't know what the Puppies and Kittens Act would be an acronym for. I'm not
Wall Street.
Yeah, some Wall Street thing.
Tax break.
But no, I mean, the HOPE Act was specifically so that homosexuals could give donate organs to other homosexuals.
Right.
And
I thought it was people diagnosed with AIDS specifically, not just gay people.
It's both. But it is specifically with people diagnosed with a particular
strain of AIDS. Well, the reason they weren't allowed to
AIDS, but,
HIV.
Yeah.
Sure, but my question is...
No, this is specifically HIV-positive people can give to confirmed HIV-positive people.
So
or rather, gay people can give to confirmed HIV-positive people.
Aha, so you don't have to be HIV-positive to give...
So it achieves both.
Okay.
But before, if you were even an MFM, or not MFM, M2M. If you had sex with males, it was a man who had sex with males. I'm sorry.
Just a gay dude?
The acronym is MSM. Yeah, if you were a gay dude, you could not donate organs.
But the mainstream media is fucking who now?
No.
Yeah. All right.
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, anyway, Jermaine, you were going to say
Jermaine
something.
Was the second.
Well, you mentioned that you think the public is kind of wising up on...
No, I'm saying that's what the Democrats think. Oh, no, you mean in terms of... Well, no, I just meant Congress and the media a little bit, because it, literally, since the Patriot Act, every single bullshit act has been like the freedom for babies bill. Well,
I think the turning point in that was No Child Left Behind, because a lot of people signed on to that, saying, this is going to help
kids. Who's left behind? Who's going to vote against that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, and then all these children got left behind.
All these children got pushed through and didn't actually have an education.
And that's a perfect segue. You want to listen to talk about DeVos?
No.
Actually, yes.
No, I don't.
We do. Because
I know Brenna has something prepared.
Yeah, one of the really terrible picks that has been made.
Oh, she's the worst.
This is going to be bad. Is the new Secretary of Education.
If she gets confirmed.
That's even
worse. Is that a confirmation post?
Yes, I think it is.
Secretary of Education.
Please call your Congress people.
Yeah, please call your Congress
people. Do you have to confirm your cabinet members?
No,
but she is a confirmed post, because I've been seeing a lot of things that are like called...
As the Secretary of what?
Education.
Apparently
that's a cabinet position, correct?
I don't know. We need to do
Secretary
more research
of the Department
because
of Education
there's been a lot
be a
of
position,
there's been a lot of Twitter activity to call your Congress
I didn't
people.
Think it required a confirmation.
It probably doesn't. It's probably just more like please don't appoint her.
Clearly, you watch more West Wing, guys.
Yeah.
No, he already was elected and he'd kept all his cabinet, so it's fine.
Okay. So Brenna, we're going to turn it over to you for a minute. You had taken some notes because...
No, we're not.
No.
Moving on.
Okay.
But we can talk more about...
Is it Betsy DeVos? Is that her name?
Yes, and she's a rabid...
billionaire.
She's the Amway lady.
She's a charter school.
She's married.
Yes.
She's married to the Amway family, and then actually her brother founded Blackwater.
Yeah. Oh that's fun.
Yep. Yeah.
Cute.
Yep.
Good time.
It's
I think I'm the only person here with a kid in school.
Yes.
My daughter is in sixth grade right now, and it's a horrifying prospect to think about what's going to happen. My sister is actually a public educator in the state of Texas. God bless her.
My sister-in-law is in Boston.
Okay.
Yep.
So I think that there's teachers and students and all kinds of people. Charter schools sound really good on paper, right? Like, give people school choice.
I've worked at one.
Yeah.
They're okay. But at the expense of some of them are okay.
This is a really complex conversation.
I don't know.
But go ahead.
Right. But at the end of the day, what she's proposing is privatize education.
That's right.
That's correct.
Right.
It's doing to education the same thing they've done to prisons and the same thing they did to healthcare.
Correct.
It's taking public money, taking public wealth, and privatizing it into private hands. And charter schools, I mean, some of them are excellent. Some of them are completely unregulated with no teachers that have certifications or qualifications. They came off the street basically from a career and they say, oh, put them in front of a kid. You know, teaching is not the same as knowing subject matter.
And some of them are the greatest schools in the country. And the fraud of that is that the kids who need it the most, that there's a lottery system literally for the kids who can get into that school system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That the public schools have failed these children so badly, particularly in areas of poverty and in inner cities, that because public education is funded on fucking property taxes, they build these charter schools, which take funding away from public schools based on how many children are allowed.
So look at
they do a lottery system. And then you're saying, okay, so just this many kids that are just lucky enough get to go. And what the fuck happens to those other kids who are left behind in a school with now less funding?
It
was already bad. It was already bad, which is why they made the charter school. Now we're going to leave these kids who are already in poverty, already disenfranchised, then they get to be in a worse school.
They never mentioned that.
With less kids and worse teachers. I mean, it's horrifying. At the same time, there's this argument like, okay, so we're going to have all the kids live in a shitty school instead of half of them or 70% of them going to a great school.
But can we talk about why they're shitty? I mean, that's really the conversation, right? Why are they shitty? They're shitty because we fund them based on, like you said, property taxes.
That's right.
And when you do that, there's naturally a disparity in the quality and of education that students get.
There's a book called Savage Inequalities.
Yeah.
And it is specifically about this, and it deals with East St. Louis, which is right around the area where... I think it was Trayvon Martin.
No, Michael Brown.
Michael Brown. And it talks about, it's a book that was written, I think, in the late 80s or early 90s, but it's still as true today as it was then.
Yeah.
And it talks about the difference between these two school districts, which are literally separated by a block. And one of them is this impoverished, literally falling apart, molding walls, falling apart ceilings, no funding, horrifying conditions school that are mostly made up of kids of color.
Yep.
And literally across the street is this like paramount of public education that is funded by this fucking gerrymandered district that went, just take all the brown people and put them in this shitty school and take all the people that have money and put them in this great school. And it's fine because it's just property taxes. It's not our fault. And the inequality between those two things was so profound that like, it is stuck with, I've read it like, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, and I've never forgotten it.
Well, and I think public education is a great example of what happens when Republicans purposefully break government to show that government doesn't work. Public education would work if we did it,
fucking it up.
If they didn't fuck it up on purpose in order to show that it didn't work, in order to justify exactly what Betsy DeVos is going to walk in and do. And all she's,
what we did with the prison system.
All you need to do is look at the Detroit public schools to understand what the rest of America is going to look like if this woman gets into position of being the Secretary of Education. Well, it's a terrifying prospect.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of looking a little bit through some of the notes Brenna has taken down on this person. It's not just the school choice in the form of the vouchers and the scholarship tax.
Oh, no, she also wants to get rid of child labor laws.
She wants to get rid of child labor laws?
Yeah.
She donates to Michigan's Marriage Equality Initiative. Her family's foundation is the largest contributor to the Anti-Equality National Organization for Marriage.
Yep. They actually named themselves Anti-Equality?
Anti-Equality National Organization.
Hey, there's some other PR names.
Again, no dog whistling. Let's just be honest about it. Fuck those
gays. She's donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to focus on the family.
Oh, yes.
Great.
They're very
Colorado
connected.
Native.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else? So she used to be pro-Common Core, but she's since flopped. And we can talk about Common Core probably on another podcast.
We can, because I don't think any of us know enough about it.
I don't. But
I know a little about it.
I know a little, because Heidi, but...
But the funny thing is, I heard on Matto this morning that she, up until probably like within a couple months ago, she was like, oh yeah, Common Core is great. And now all of a sudden she's like, no, no, Common Core is bad. Like, oh, she's, of course you're flopping because the GOP loves you now. It's great.
Well, maybe some senator up for re-election or something will bring that up to grandstand.
Maybe. I mean, the main thing that I thought was interesting about her is that her family is really focused on pushing the right to work laws through in Michigan. And because of that, basically, for anybody who is familiar with education, there is basically like a union for the NEA. Anyway, at this point, so because of that, you can't really, in Michigan at least, or any right-to-work state, you can't really...
Go ahead.
Sorry, you can't really strike. And so when the Detroit teachers earlier this year, tried to strike, they had to use sick days. And then she wrote an op-ed afterwards saying, like, they shouldn't even be allowed to use their sick days to do that. That's
Jesus
ridiculous.
Christ.
That's outrageous.
I feel like they should... I hope... And I know this is a fool's hope, but I do hope that if these picks go through and if these policies start to go through, that we, I don't know, maybe it's a fool's hope that we start to see a rebirth of the labor movement and a resurgence of people.
Well, it's long overdue.
It's long overdue. And we've seen little pockets of it. But
there has been movement. We kind of ignore it because we don't work in those industries. But one of you mentioned this before. There's been movement for fast food workers.
Yes.
And there's been movement for
Walmart workers.
Yes.
Yes.
Especially
there's
in
been
places like Seattle.
For Target workers.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So cities have passed.
There's not enough talked about it, but there has been movement. It's going to have to be on a much greater scale now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think labor is one of those things that it's not glamorous, it's not sexy.
And automation is going to accelerate that too.
Yes.
We want to get really, I would love to do an entire podcast about what is going to happen in the next 15 years when 3D printing becomes the manufacturing technology of the future. And we do not have laborers who actually physically assemble things anymore.
We should be re-educating people now.
That's
we're
right.
not going to do that with this new administration.
No,
that's
it's
right.
It's going to be exactly like what happened in the 1920s and the 1930s when You know, the forklift was invented, and now we didn't have to have one person per sack of stuff to carry off of a boat, yep. and we could bail things.
Right.
It's like JC and I were talking about the other night. I was like, I hate driving. I don't like driving. I don't like driving at night. I can't parallel park. I'm just waiting for the fucking self-driving car.
Which is my dream.
And he was like,
actually, Uber's already
going to take
that.
Away yeah. a lot of jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. What about self-driving Uber trucks? Levers,
like all yes. those things. And I was like, you know, like, electricity took out a lot of candlestick makers, but I still like having lights. Like, well,
yeah. But then you also had the Luddite movement. Stopping. Like, you had people literally burning the thread mills because they're like, this is taking away my job. Like,
right.
there's
right.
going to be robot wars.
Right. Maybe we look to the history and look to the future and say, okay, this is an inevitability. What can we retrain people to do?
Well, this is where some of Trump's lies might catch up to him.
Yeah.
Because
he likes to pretend there is no automation. And then all the jobs left just because of cheap labor.
Right. And he's going to bring back all of these jobs. Yeah, it's like, no, that's not how this works.
So actually, I had a talk with one of the VPs at Xcel Energy a couple weeks ago, and I won't put his name out there, but I was just kind of asking him about what the new administration was meant for the energy sector. And he was talking mostly local, but he was saying, like, coal is just not, it's not economically viable.
You can mandate
whatever you want, but there will be no more coal plants built.
All you can do is hang on to the ones
that currently exist until they're no longer operable. And he's saying like 2050, like Xcel built one in 2010, and he said by 2050 it's going to be obsolete.
Mm-hmm. Because it can still do plenty of damage to the environment.
Absolutely. But Trump went through each county and, like, hand by hand shook people's hands and were like, I'm going to get you your job back.
He's
I personally guarantee it. Believe me, I'm going to get you your job back. I guarantee it.
Instead of wasting your time, because if he would take the time to retrain these people for green energy jobs, then
that's what Clinton proposed.
Exactly.
I feel like Clinton had the scruples to not lie to people's faces.
She made the mistake of saying,
I'm going to put coal miners out of business, which was taken out of context, granted, but that's the only thing that stuck.
Trump is back the fifth grader that runs for class president that says,
free ice cream.
Free ice cream.
No more homework. Like,
yes.
Free ice cream and grab them by the pussy. Fifth grade. On that note, we're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
It's been a time. It's been a struggle. But everything is fine if you're a straight white male muggle. We've tried to stay composed, cross our fingers, count to 10. But every time we get to 9, you fuck it up again. You took David Bowie, Alan Rickman, Prince and Sharon Jones, Terry Wogan, Ronnie Corbett, Carolina Hearn and Leonard Cohen. Victoria Wood was enough for us, but still you wanted more. Muhammad Ali, Gene Wilder and the Great British Bake was the final straw. You shot down a gorilla, we can't cure the Zika virus, and the woman's still to blame when men force their way inside us. Rod Turner's not a rapist, cause just look how fast he swims. Can someone get me Ambien to calm my shaking quim? Should we just try to unplug you and then plug you back in? Did your parents get divorced or did you just drink too much gin? God damn it, 2016, and on top of all of that, Cats is back on Broadway. Who the fuck did that? They're growing all the shootings, both on mass and by police. A spike in racist hate crimes and a bombing down in Nice. The death toll is upsetting and your politics are farce. Thank you 2016, you fucked us up the arse. Cause all over the world it's not looking good for you if you're female, Muslim, POC or LGBTQ. And God fucking forbid we'd let Hillary be in charge. Instead we get the spunk trumpets and fuckboys in this farce. Yes, you really took a dump when you let Pat Nugget for Rod. Need a racist referendum, who put that shitty frog in charge? Your Brexit was a dum-dum, now our country lives in fear. You really are the skid mark of all the shitty years. Yes, the USA's now governed by a fuck cheeto with hair, and it's not just in the States, the fucking clowns are everywhere. Fuck, fuck, fuck. Three cheers for fucking Trumpy and his neo-Nazi crew. What a bloody nasty, messy, booby fuck to do. We're sorry for the swearing, and we're sorry to be crude. But we're really cunting angry, and it's all because of you. You laid an egg of solid talk, you taste like made of wee. You garbage bag of bum dust, you're a shitty, shitty 2016. La 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 la.
Hello and welcome back to Irreverent Testimony here of the Great Roundtable of 2016.
Only great thing about 2016.
The only great thing about this month, that's for sure. So we left off talking about Betsy DeVos. Any other nightmare clown people that Trump has floated for cabinet positions we want to talk about? We want to talk about something completely different. I open the floor to the roundtable.
I don't know.
Okay, great. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next week.
Good night.
Is there any way that this doesn't happen? I know that it's a fool's hope. Is there any way that January 20th comes around?
No. A giant asteroid can hit Earth.
All right, excellent.
I've seen that movie.
Molly, don't do that to our listeners. Don't do that.
No, I'm just...
Well, let's talk about that, because there are some of these, like, far-fetched things floating out there.
Which
some of them I appreciate as symbolic gestures, but I really do feel sorry for the people that think that they're going to actually stop.
But that's the problem, Jermaine. Like, I like it in a sense. It's like, okay, the people are pissed off and they're wanting to take action. They're wanting to organize. So once that fails, do we parlay that organization into something meaningful, or does everybody throw up their hands and say, it's all rigged, we're going home?
Yeah, it's like what happened with the Bernie Bros. It's like, hey, he got everybody organized and then he didn't win. Everybody's like, okay, yeah, never mind that. And that's what's going to happen with us.
I think Brenna is probably right. I hate to be half glass empty on this, but...
Is there something symbolic about it, though? Is there something symbolic about saying, you know, he did lose the popular vote, the count keeps rising and rising in ways that the media is sort of saying, you know, this is profound, this is something...
I would love...
Robert historic. Reich even said... historic, exactly. Robert Reich even said, like, you know, here are 4 points for why the Electoral College was invented, to prevent someone like Trump from being the president, and...
And if you pull back the telescopic view, I think there is something defeating about looking at things in a microcosm, whereby each movement kind of fizzles out, right? Like, we had the Tea Partiers that became something else, and the Occupiers. Each thing kind of fizzles out, right? But if you look at it in the larger context, there is something happening. And I don't know what that something is, and I don't know that it's going to mean a lot. But I do think that this election has crystallized, or at least brought to the... At least we are playing on a transparent playing field now, that I think... I have a little bit of hope that people aren't just going to go home.
I think to a certain degree you're right, but you know, I think, you know, immediately after the election there were all the anti-Trump protesters outside of Trump Tower and all the people you know, running around Chicago, trying to do whatever they could possibly do. You know, all the Trump Tower or all the Trump buildings had the tenants voted to remove the words Trump from the building because they didn't want anything to do with it. And I think you get some identity politics stuff out of that. And I think, like, that really culminates in things like hashtag not my president, which ultimately doesn't
do much.
Do anything.
Yeah.
And
because
I think
he is actually your president.
Well, yeah, no,
that's the problem.
You don't get to choose.
Yeah. Well, you do.
Well, you got a chance.
And you fucked it up. Stayed home.
Yeah.
Which is another thing entirely.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, you know, one of the things I don't want to talk about this book before I've read it all and really can coalesce my thoughts around it, but one of the things she talks about in there was how the right used electoral politics to put forth their revolution, and the left has rejected electoral politics. And I think that when you look at that, when you look at the messaging around we're going to infiltrate our government versus we're going to not even engage it, what lessons do we learn from that, and how do we flip that script? Because not engaging electoral politics just means it happens to you, not that you avoid it.
Right, and I think that's absolutely true. I mean, ever since the concept of the 50-state strategy was introduced, Democrats have really latched onto that, because I think that we do have this sense of moral superiority, and, like, if we could just explain it to people, and that's where we get the talking down people and the mansplaining. But, like, I think we feel like if we could just get people to understand where we're coming from, then we would get all 50 states. And we've been focused on this 50-state strategy to a place where, like, all Trump had to do was go to Pennsylvania a couple times, hang out in Wisconsin a bunch.
It's total moneyball.
It was
money
done.
Ball.
Yeah.
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 It's total moneyball. You're exactly right.
That's right.
I mean, he played the odds.
Statistics and numbers.
So with all the talk that Trump didn't have an actual campaign, and nobody knew what they were doing, and he didn't have any field offices.
They had no ground game. The one out here was run by a 12-year-old.
Yeah, I remember that.
Like,
the Jefferson County Trump.
And we dismissed, and we ignored. Yeah.
And we didn't dismiss and ignore it. We made fun of it.
We made fun of it.
I mean, it's hard not to make fun of it when your person running your office is a 12-year-old boy.
The question is, was that all bullshit or overblown by the Beltway press, or the local press, or does none of that bullshit matter anymore?
Or did they play it against us and say, if we do this, they'll just make fun of us,
and it'll just make them
look like smug liberal assholes, and we'll, you know, that's the game.
I have a different take on it. I think that that was a clickbait news story that got Trump's name in the news because he knew he was going to lose Colorado. So he was like, let's do something cute in Colorado. I'm going to lose it no matter what. So let's at least get my name in the news.
Close. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and so on the episode of the podcast that I was on before, I was talking about Trump has been in the media and mastering the media for at least four
Absolutely.
Decades.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Absolutely.
So there's all this, doesn't he know that's going to kill him? And like, there's methods to his madness. And, you know, now people are starting to realize live is distraction, but I think it's even deeper than that. Like, I think there's, like, I've been in the media 20 years, and I know there's some underhanded stuff you can do in order to, like, you know,
move the needle.
Take advantage of the way the media works and the economics behind it. He's got twice as much experience as me and anybody else.
And, yeah, and no scruples and no moral qualms whatsoever.
No, I absolutely nothing agree. I think it was.
Have any of you read Trust Me, I'm Lying by Ryan Holiday?
Yes.
No. You know,
tell me like, about that.
It just talks about how easy it is to get publicity and how no publicity is bad publicity and the economic model. And he gets into like the historic, you know, evolution of mass media. And it's really insightful and it's really good to know, but he also doesn't really offer any hope. Right. He's just like, because he that's what he does. He's like, I'm just going to tell you what my tricks are and you can't stop it. Sucks.
Yeah. Wow. And you feel like Trump like just took that, like he owns that as like his.
I think he's even beyond that. Yeah. Ryan's like younger than me and he's, you know.
Yeah, I mean, isn't it obvious? I think it was Jeff Zucker that went on a podcast recently and was talking about how they thought Trump was such a joke and that they thought that most of the things that he were saying were so ridiculous that one of his largest regrets is that because he said such ridiculous statements that they would often run his entire campaign rally speeches in their entirety, nonstop, like commercial-free, because they're like, he's going to say something stupid next, like people are glued to the TV. And he's like, obviously we didn't want him to win, but it was ratings, and if there's one mistake
we made... Wait, Jeff Zucker said that?
Yeah, he was full of shit. Yeah,
he was.
He did. He said, like... Yeah, he's like, we regret running them in full because we were running them because something ridiculous was going to happen. But what we were doing was just giving him all of his
free campaign
money.
He's a personal friend of Donald
Trump. He was running.
Well, he didn't want him to win the presidency, though.
I don't believe that.
I don't either.
We can pull a clip if you want. I mean,
no, I'm sure he said it. I think he's full of shit.
Okay, he might be full of shit, but he did say it.
Well, the media treated.
Regardless, I mean, one of the things that I think we can point to is, like, how many times we were sitting around watching just the news, and there were TV cameras pointed at just an empty podium that said, like, Trump about to speak at any minute, and, like, 20 minutes of just, like, rows of flags and an empty podium would go by. And
people talking about what's Trump going to say.
And what's Trump going to say.
There's all this policy, or Hillary Clinton is literally giving a policy speech somewhere.
Right. Or, I mean, at the time, I think Bernie was still in the race, and it's like, Bernie's giving a rally speech right now, and they're going
to
play, like,
60,000 people.
To 60,000 people, and they're going to give a 10-second clip of that. But in the meantime, we're going to sit there and watch
I'd love to hear a bombing in Syria that we're, like, it's on the side corner screen. Like,
I remember the day.
Maybe, it's on, like, maybe we'll talk about this. If Trump talks soon enough and we don't have to go to commercial break, we'll talk about the bombing in Syria.
I hope that I don't put Sarah on the spot, but I'd love to hear just about media and what your take on it is.
So the thing that is the most terrifying for me is to watch him now trying to discredit the media as if he is preemptively trying to make it seem like the media can't be trusted, so that when the media finally wakes up and does start reporting on all of these terrible things that are happening and all of these insane things that he's doing, he'll be inoculated against it.
Yeah.
Right.
And his supporters will be like, well, that's just the media again. Yep. They're all full of shit.
I mean, that's already happening in droves.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's true.
It's terrifying. I mean, because if we live in a post-factual world.
That's what I was going to say, too.
Nothing is trustworthy.
Well, we're beyond that. I mean, he's basically telegraphed that he may prosecute media.
Yeah, he's going to open up the federal libel laws, which there are none, but...
And Breitbart.com has basically become state media.
Yes,
state-sponsored media.
Right. That's terrifying.
And now the top trending hashtag tonight was about boycotting Kellogg because they pulled their ads off of the site.
I watched 1 hour of MSNBC yesterday at the nail salon.
Bless your heart.
Yeah, just accidentally because I happened to be... It was like hostage situation. And... It was appalling how just normalizing, and even Howard Dean.
Can't watch it anymore.
Howard Dean was on, and he was like, they asked him who would make the best Secretary of State, and he said, oh, David Petraeus would definitely make. And I was.
Howard Dean said that?
Howard Dean said that David Petraeus. Oh, my God.
That came next.
Howard Dean said, of all the choices that have come forward, David Petraeus is definitely the most qualified.
Well, you know, he's of all the other fucking names that have been floated, that's not.
But that wasn't the point. He had the opportunity to say that we're even discussing this as fucking insane, and this is a fascist regime that we need to be talking about. But that's not what they're bringing him on to say. But what I'm saying is it's just ingrained now. It's normalized. I felt so defeated after 1 hour of that of TV, because I'm like, why people feel this way.
And like, it's exhausting. It might be sacrilegious for me to say this because he's been, you know, basically so insanely disgraced that he's completely discredited entirely. But the only person that we really need to be hearing from right now is Anthony Weiner, because he's the only person who would come into public and say things like, this
"We should
is
just
fucking
run him for
disgusting.
President." Like, just like, fuck it.
Be like, I'm Anthony Weiner, and I fucking know it's disgusting.
If I'm shaking my head at this guy,
you know it's bad.
You know it's
bad.
That
is a great 2018 slogan, and I think we're on to that.
Well, that, you know, we watched the Weiner documentary the other night.
I have not seen it.
You brought him up.
Yeah.
He's an asshole, and he's obviously got problems.
Yes.
But the people of New York have decided, you know, you're a creep. We don't want you.
Yeah.
You can be an asshole in New York. You cannot be a creep.
But the thing is, they gave him a chance, even after the first
episode. Yes, they did.
They were like, he's our, you know.
He's our
pervert.
Asshole. Yeah.
Well, that's Jermaine. That's the point, because, it was a month and a half before the election, the goddamn Access Hollywood tape drops, and then a woman after woman is saying, coming out, and like, at a certain point, rural Kentucky and our friends here home state of Oklahoma wouldn't come out and say, you know what, you are a creep, fuck this, but New Yorkers will. So what's real America?
That's the question.
What is real decency?
We got into this a little bit on the last podcast in terms of like cities versus rural, and like the way that we fetishize rural America as like real America, and the fact that more Americans live in cities than they do in rural America by like large percentages, and how we still fetishize this idea of like, if you live on, you know, in this rural place, with, like, everyone knows their neighbor, and you know, everyone's
that's not real America.
Why are those values more American than city values where more Americans live?
Because
because a lot of white people live in cities.
Because
Because the media has fetishized rural America as America, because it is entirely white.
And then when you go to the
cities,
not just America, the world.
And I think that's important. A really important point is that autocratic and fascist regimes have appealed to the rural areas and the real country to install their dictatorship.
But we haven't really answered my question. Maybe there is no answer. Why did New Yorkers say, that's one too many dick pic wieners, we don't want you, and white America was like, grab him by the pussy, and he really did? Okay.
I don't know the answer to that.
I can put forth a theorem, which is, once it got to the point where it was strangers that could have turned out to be 15-year-olds,
What about David Vitter?
What about the kid laying in bed next to him?
I think that was the big one.
Brenna, that's a good point.
That was after the mayoral race.
No, you're right. That's right.
That's true.
Yeah.
But I mean, that was really, I think, when everyone was like, we're done. I mean, like,
yeah, what we're talking about is he took a dick pic of himself. He said, this really pretty lady he sent this to this woman that he was sexting, Anthony Weiner did, online. And he said, like, a really pretty lady just crawled into bed with me, and she was like, oh, really? And then he sent literally a selfie of himself and his, like, infant daughter.
Okay.
And it was like, all right, well, that's just fucking
awful.
That's a bad dad joke.
That's not even a bad dad joke.
That's
a literal dad joke.
But yeah, Trump can say that he would fuck his daughter if she wasn't his daughter.
But see, the thing is, that wasn't a dad joke. That was a dad talking about what a hot bod his daughter has. That wasn't a joke at all.
More universal, like we think about these public figures that have these scandals and survive them. So you talk about the mayor of D.C., Marion Barry. You talk about what's his name in Toronto.
Oh, the crack smoking mayor of Toronto.
Yeah, like there's a lot of crack smoking in the mayor. Our Supreme Court Justice, Clarence Thomas. People get through these and they forget.
You know what Anthony Weiner's mistake might have been?
His name being Weiner.
Well,
it was a little too on the nose.
Convenient.
After trying to lie about it for a little bit, admitted everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trump never did.
Trump never lied.
Thomas never did.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, they never came clean.
Well, and also poor Huma. I mean, like, to see her face every time sitting next to him.
Oh, my God. Documentary.
Every time she's standing next to him and he makes some admission that, like, yes, I lied, I did do this.
She just looks so defeated.
She looks so defeated and terrible. She didn't do the Hillary face of, like, I'm going to stand by my man. She's just looking at him like, you motherfucker.
She tried to at first.
I mean, she does in public, but if you see them in private, like, her face, they're, like, just having coffee at home and her face at him is just like so this, like disgust and dismay and just
so
like I fucking hate your
does
bullshit.
Hillary get to divorce Bill now?
I don't know if she wants to.
I don't think she wants to.
I don't think she ever wanted to.
I'm just asking.
The thing is, I don't think that he ever cheated on her. It's the weird thing. Whenever I have to try to defend.
Yeah, that's true.
When people say, like, Hillary should have left Bill, I'm like, why? They were never monogamous in the first place.
She was pissed that he was.
Public.
Public. Well, that he was not.
So careless.
Yeah. He was so careless about it.
It wasn't that he was cheating. That was never a thing.
Yeah.
Why would you do it in the fucking Oval Office with a goddamn intern? Like, can you not be more discreet than that?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's not,
you're the
but hold on, like,
for sake at this point, you're not the governor anymore.
But let's rewind, I don't know, 30 years from when that happened and talk about JFK and Marilyn Monroe. What the fuck was discreet about that?
Nothing, but the media was an entirely different animal.
That's right. That's a totally different animal.
The way they covered the president.
And so was the Republican Party.
Yeah,
right?
It was. Yeah.
And I mean, if you look back at, like, right, FDR, like, he was able to sort of not have himself be shown as being in a wheelchair for many, many years.
Yeah.
Like,
he also had a mistress. I thought that's what he did.
He did. And we've also...
His wife was gay and had many mistresses and had her own house on the
grounds. It Harding that had the child out of wedlock?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, James Buchanan was gay.
James Buchanan was gay. That was what I was going to bring up.
There's a lot of scandals that would be scandals now that aren't. But
the media just would never cover. Like, print press would never...
It's something that you didn't do. And I think it was...
No, it was seen as untoward. It was seen as like...
We have a real-life Jenga game going here.
We do. I don't know exactly what's happening.
Our discussion on this end of the table is very enthralling.
Some candles, a wine glass, an iPhone.
This will end well.
Yeah, this is going to end well on the podcast. If you hear a big crash,
it's speaking of Colorado, that it really kind of started with Gary Hart.
Yes, we should talk about
Gary Hart's amazing.
But the
case of Gary Hart's great. If people don't know, go ahead and relay it, Rachel.
Yeah,
I think you know it really well.
Too.
Yeah, we can all do the story together, but essentially, Gary Hart was what year? 84.
He was running for the
governor
of Colorado. Is that right?
No, he was running for the Democratic primary against Walter Mondale to challenge Reagan.
He was already okay.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
Early hypothetical polls show he might have had a chance.
Right,
he was looking pretty good. He was tall and handsome and kind of Bartlett-like in the things
he said.
My mom worked on his campaign.
No way, really?
Yeah. I remember stuffing envelopes for Gary Hart back in 84.
And Gary Hart had a mistress.
Yeah.
Gary Hart did not have a mistress, right?
Gary Hart had a girlfriend.
No. Which is the Colorado... We have some infidelity and we have some polyamory in Colorado. So one of our candidates had a mistress and one of them had
Gary
a
Gary Hart was married and had a mistress named Donna Rice.
Yeah.
You and I are not talking about the same person.
Okay.
We're all not talking about... They're talking about presidential candidate Gary Hart.
It was
my hometown paper, the Miami Herald, that had this discussion and they said, well, this is not the kind of thing we cover. And they're like, well, we have a lead on it.
Yes.
And we can break the story.
And there was this one reporter, this dude.
So why shouldn't we break the story?
And he followed them and he was like, this seems lascivious, but I'll do it just because it can't be true. And then he like saw them walking out of some Miami hotel, and he was like,
No, it was D.C. He brought her to D.C.
Oh, okay.
To his condo in D.C. And they had a little Love Nest weekend.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The Miami Herald broke the story, and Gary Hart was done, and Mondale lost 49 states.
And Gary Hart was the guy that was like, follow me around if you want to, I don't care.
Yeah.
With the monkey boat and all the shit. And
he was on a boat called Monkey Business with
Monkey Business with his, yeah.
That's within the past, I'd say 15 years, because I used to work in newsrooms in Florida where Jeb Bush was there, and like the Bush family, members of the Bush family, were literally caught in crack houses. And we knew about it, and it was like, we're just not going to put that out there. Now, there's other complications because their family owned...
Oh, I have connections to the Bush family, too. You know, I was in kindergarten with Jeb's kid.
Yeah, and like...
But you were saying, like, part of it, cover it because...
Part of it is because the Bush family had investments in certain stations.
Oh, yeah.
But... Even beyond that, it was like,
and they were connected to all the biggest developers,
right?
And all.
But there was a moral sense that you had that was like, we don't want to do that to members of the family.
Yeah, because like you know, he's got troubled. It's not him,
right?
And he's got troubled family members, like.
So is the question? I mean, I guess I'm wondering: is the question then how was Trump impervious to every like all these things that took down every but like John Edwards and I mean it's Anthony Weiner. Like I don't what
because he lied about it.
I think it was because he was shameless about it. He was just like, fuck yeah, I am, yeah. And I fuck all y'all.
We're used to it by now. Like, we've been through this maybe. Multiple times. We've heard this crap before.
Do you feel like it's because, Lindsay, that he didn't apologize? Because when you as a man in a place of power say, like, I was wrong, that makes you seem weak.
That could
if
go
you're
one of
Donald
two ways.
Trump and you say... What?
Well, he kind of apologized, but it was Bill Clinton's fault.
That's how men are, and like, what do you want from me?
Yeah.
And why is this even an issue?
Just locker room
as opposed to Anthony Weiner, who came out with his wife and by his side and was like, I'm a terrible person.
We haven't heard from Melania at all.
Right? Is that the difference? Is like...
I don't know. I don't know what the difference is. That's why I'm asking.
I do.
To me, it's just fatigue. We've heard it all before.
I think it's like, I'm a sniveling... person now
it's being
because
weak.
I'm weak because I'm admitting my weakness, or Trump being like,
fuck you.
I talked like that to a radio DJ. Like, what the fuck do you care?
Yeah, fuck yeah, I fucked them all.
That's how men talk.
Hold on one second.
If
Bernie Sanders had become the nominee, the Republicans were ready to run, and when we talked about this on a podcast,
the rape
with his weird sort of beat poetry stream of consciousness essay from the 60s.
And it's weird.
Where he was
Sorry.
Mad at his ex-wife for
and
not putting out or whatever the hell that was about.
It was gross.
And it did come off as weird. And they were ready to run with it to call him a misogynist and a pro-rape whatever. And it obviously it pales in comparison to one-tenth of Trump's shit.
Doesn't excuse
but
it, but yes.
It probably would have played in middle America somehow.
That's where I'm wondering, like, what is the... What the fuck? I mean, he's Teflon. What is it about him that all these things that took everybody else down?
Well, Republicans.
I think it's Sarah's point. I think it's Sarah's point. Yeah, he's unapologetic. He doesn't ever say I was wrong. He just says like, "What?
That's what men
That's
do.
What
I'm
men
a man.
Fucking do,
man.
And I'm a man."
So there's the trope that it's never the act that gets you in trouble. It's the cover up. There was no cover up.
Yeah,
maybe that's part of
and,
it.
And
didn't
he
try.
Also, right? It's also. It's this again, this media manipulation where it's how he talks about it, because he distracts from it. It's like you step into a kick and you take all the power out of it. So it's the way he talks about it. He makes a bigger issue out of the spectacle than the actual thing that's being questioned.
Sure. Right.
It's like he gish gallops the whole, like, you get so overwhelmed that, I mean, you eventually just get immune to it.
Well, he just says, isn't this media escapade such a nightmare? Mm-hmm. And isn't it such a witch hunt? And who cares? And why are they saying this about me?
Instead so it's like ad hominem.
He never has to say, like,
I did or did not do it.
That 13-year-old, or like, yes, I grope women. He just says, like, look at this media. Look at them do this.
Yeah. That'll quietly get settled out of court, by the way.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah. No, I think she, didn't she?
She dropped the charges because she got death threats.
Too many legal loopholes.
Yeah.
So I wanted to add something that is a possible hypothesis for why there's a double standard with Trump versus Wiener, which is
Trump versus anyone.
Well, yeah, but Trump kind of gets to have the fame and glamour. He can say, like, these are groupies. So, you know, even the famous quote was like, when you're famous, you can just walk up to him, grab him by the pussy. They just let you.
Yeah.
He doesn't say, like, I forcibly did it or they didn't want me to. He just says they just let you. So there's a little bit of a, like,
so the frat boy. The slut-shaming the woman, it's the woman's fault, right?
Yeah. Or not necessarily the woman's fault, but it's potentially, she like, it. She kind of expected that kind of behavior.
It's a dog whistle to rape,
No, it most certainly is. It absolutely is a dog whistle to sexual assault. Yeah. But the they just let you part, I think, for a lot of people, lets it slide. But then I want to say, I want to contrast that with Anthony Weiner, which is, he's sending possibly unsolicited dick pics to people, and they maybe did or did not just let him. And I think for a lot of, particularly older people who might not be of the Twitter, Snapchat, etc. generation.
Dick pic generation.
that, like, virtual cheating versus, like, grabbing some pussy from some groupies might be a little bit different, or they don't quite understand. So the idea of, like, he has access to one woman's pussy at a time when he's grabbing with
Don
his little
Draper
baby hands.
Never set Snapchat.
Exactly. Like, he's only got two baby hands. The most pussies he can grab at a time.
That's really one.
Is really one with his baby hands. But if you're
maybe just the labia.
Yeah, exactly. But if you're sending out fucking dick pics, you could be reaching millions of women at a time.
And he was, but not that wasn't his intention.
So, he didn't mean to.
The visual part of it, like, we saw that photo.
Sure.
We didn't see Donald Trump actually grabbing
a pussy. Yeah.
Like, that was not. That was not cast for posterity.
We actually didn't see him say it. Right? We only heard her say it and then see him walk out of the bus.
I think the Russians may have some shit on tape.
Grab them by the pussy might have been more impactful.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
The Russians may have some shit on tape that they could unveil when it's.
Oh, God, I'm sure.
Yeah, the Russians have Trump's little tiny dick hands and his dick in their possession.
Him and Putin in a bathhouse? Like.
And there's all the unreleased Apprentice stuff.
No, he went on some some sexual holiday in Russia for some business thing, and of course the KGB,
like, they called it that.
There was the whole story about him being a sex trafficker, which he was.
He was
in his modeling business.
And
that never caught traction. Which I was like, How does that not catch traction?
The airplane that one of his best friends used to travel people to his quote-unquote pleasure island was called the Lolita Express, where he kept disgusting underage women on an island where he had a private resort.
Yeah.
Now,
sounds about right.
Trump, as far as I recall, has like 40 or so recorded trips on that Lolita Express. Although, technically, if we're going to get down to it, Bill Clinton, I believe, has 4 or 5 recorded trips on that same airplane.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So have any of you
campaign
seen,
was not about to bring that shit up.
No. Yeah. No, exactly.
Have any of you seen Inside Job?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think it gets down to the Anthony Weiner quote at the very end of Inside Job, where it's like, yeah, there's all this stuff going on Wall Street that's technically illegal, but we usually don't persecute people for their vices.
Yep.
And then they show the title card like 4 months later was when his scandal broke.
Great.
After that was filmed.
Right.
So
I mean, and I think, I mean, how much of this really does come down to, we're talking like all these things that we would have issues with in any other candidate, but how much just comes down to him appealing to the populist sentiment and the throw a grenade in the fucking government sentiment and just being that aspirational candidate. If you vote for me, you can be the guy who grabs him by the pussy and makes all the money.
Sure.
And,
but the once he's sworn in, the media, at least they shouldn't. Some might be scared to, but no holds barred. You're the president now, and all the trips on the Lolita Express and the trafficking and pussy grabbing should be fair game. And what comes to that? Is it still Teflon at that point?
But what Jermaine was saying was like that we don't prosecute people for their vices, and I think that's really true, especially in people that are in power.
Well,
like
if you have a bag of weed in your pocket driving down the street, we're going to persecute you for that vice.
Well,
God
what
damn.
Color are you?
Well, I mean,
do they check you if you have weed or not? Like, it really comes down to how much privilege that you have, right?
Yeah.
So, like, if you're David Vitter and you got caught banging prostitutes in diapers, You still have not been prosecuted for that.
That's
and you're
right.
Still
now he
a
got
senator.
His, we're always going to know that he was banging prostitutes in diapers.
So
and we'll
cares?
Bring that
so
up
what?
Every time we
power.
Get the chance.
But he's
but
still in power.
He's still in power. Who gives a shit?
Right.
I mean, we can know everything.
It doesn't
everything.
Matter. It doesn't
no.
matter. But if you're, you know, a young black kid in Baltimore and you've got some weed on you, you're in fucking jail.
Right.
So that's the difference between getting prosecuted for your vices or not is power. And power comes from
well, and not
money.
Not only
I mean,
that, but we
money,
can
but
say
money, but privilege,
money,
right? It's privilege.
Power, yeah.
It's power. And power is privilege, and privilege comes from a number of things, including class and race and.
Well, the sentiment of we don't prosecute people for their vices. If you're talking about like a RICO case, or you're trying to build something larger because you're trying to take down, I don't know, Bank of America or Citibank or AmeriCorps or like any of the things that.
But here, can
not,
we
not AmeriCorps? I'm just
goddamn like, AmeriCorps.
Fuck AmeriCorps.
Not AmeriCorps. I misspoke.
Can we go to
Maslow? I misspeak sometimes.
It feels to me like Maslow's hierarchy of needs is a conversation that has to happen here because we're talking up here, like we're talking about all these like nuances and details.
Yeah.
But if people can't put fucking food on their table, mm-hmm. and if they can't take care of their kids, mm-hmm. and if they don't feel pride in who they are as mm-hmm. people, they're gonna vote even if it's against their best interest. They're mm-hmm. gonna vote with their primal brain.
That's true.
Absolutely.
And I think what we're missing here as a liberal people is we talk about all the stuff that we should be freaking out over, like corruption and the RICO. Like nobody gives a shit. They want jobs and they want food. And how do the Democrats now go and say, we are the party. We talked all this shit up here, but we are the party who will get you food, who will be able to get you work. And that's, I think, where we dropped the ball.
Yeah, and I would add something else to that, which is, you know, come around early primary season, I think we've talked about this in the podcast before. We've got a lot of people in our lives who were leaning Republican before Trump was the nominee.
Yeah.
Because they feel that that is the party that is going to get them to be...
Joe the Plumber.
Sarah Palin. It's the party that's going to get us to be rich. Like, I want to be that
aspirational.
Someday. It's
yep.
aspirational. I want to be a millionaire. I'm never going to get to be a millionaire if I'm helping everyone be a hundredaire.
Yep.
So I want to get mine.
Yep.
And we just feel a little bit differently. And I think there were a lot of people that felt that way that I know personally that once Trump was elected or nominated, that switched their minds completely, and they were like, there's no way that guy's gonna get me. Like, that guy's greedy, essentially.
Yeah, but their parents
was their
ate
opinion.
It up.
Absolutely.
And he won.
So I'm saying,
so what
like,
did we miss?
Of the people in my life, I think that there were a couple people that changed their mind when they saw that, but I'm guaranteeing that that was not the majority of people who saw that when they said...
Well, we have about 10 minutes, and I would like to switch gears to that which I just brought up. And why... I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to address Molly's issue of Maslow's hierarchy and how we have failed as Democrats.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things we failed to do completely is to talk about security.
Yeah.
That's one of my of his hierarchical...
Yeah, it is.
Security.
It's absolutely down at the bottom.
And we have completely been smug and liberal about this idea of national security and personal security. We have talked about how... It's racist and Islamophobic and anti-law enforcement. And I think that there is a sort of primal need of a lot of Americans who we have not addressed this need of security effectively. You know, Hillary Clinton will talk about security in a way that is like national security.
Well, hold on.
That's what the gun issue comes down to.
Well,
yeah, that's absolutely right.
It's more than the gun issue.
It is, but
is Hillary Clinton wrong when she says what the shit that Donald Trump says is a great recruiting tool for people like Al Qaeda?
No, but that's what he said.
But
that's a nuanced argument.
What I'm saying is what we failed to do was address the fear that Americans have about Paris and Belgium and the actual terrorist attacks that have happened. We all said that's racist, and yeah, it happens, but like, let's not, like, we've all sort of brushed under the rug.
Yeah.
We all sort of said, like, that's just reactionary nationalism.
But we can have Orlando and Dylan and nobody blinks an eye.
And we go, isn't it so sad for, I mean, I remember.
But
I don't think that as Democrats we have addressed security in a way
that
I don't think we have to be Republicans about it. I don't think we have to be conservative about it. But I think we have to actually, like,
we have
address
to,
that people have these
yep,
insecurities
fears.
And fears, and maybe find a way to talk about them in a way that is...
We have to be able
I
to...
I don't know. Productive.
We have to be able to talk about trauma. Because what's happening is that we are experiencing personal and psychological and societal trauma that is causing people to react from a place of absolute primal fear. Mm-hmm. And when you get people in that space, they don't give a fuck about anything except keeping themselves and their kids secure.
Sure.
No, I think that's absolutely true, but there's a flip side to that coin. And I can't remember, I think it was Trevor Noah that brought this point up, but one of the late night people was talking about when you have a kid that was raised in America, who felt like they were an American and had an American identity their entire life, and all of a sudden you hear somebody saying, we're going to throw your family out, you're not American, you don't belong. What stronger recruitment tool could you have for someone to say, I don't like America anymore, and I don't feel like I belong. Fuck America. I feel isolated.
Let's get it.
Like,
let's get real.
Like what Trump... could be a stronger recruitment tool for self-radicalization than making that person feel like they are other?
Absolutely. And what motivation does Trump have to not do that?
Well,
he wants people to be radicalized because that helps him be radicalized on the other end.
No,
that's
absolutely true.
That.
I think that's absolutely true. But I think the thing that
about this, and I think we will at some point. But for the last few minutes. Let's talk about, not in general, but maybe specifically our parents, because we had some uncomfortable Thanksgiving dinners, and there's obviously a very uncomfortable, weird generational divide that a lot of us are dealing with. I know our listeners are.
Yeah.
How the fuck do we work with this? My dad actually is a Republican, and he abstained from voting, and I'm really pissed at him just for that, especially in terms of what they're going to do to his Social Security and Medicaid, which he depends on.
And if the VA is now run by God knows who.
That's right. That's
we're talking about
Sarah
privatizing
Palin.
The VA anyway.
Yeah.
No, privatizing the VA,
so
that's going to happen.
So what's at the root of this generational divide, and can we possibly bridge it, or do we just get to say, I told you so, when everything turns to shit in 2 years?
And I think that
whatever's left in your will, we better goddamn well get.
That is what my fallacy was in this election, was that this was a generational divide, that it was the old versus the young, it was old white heads that I was waiting for them to die off, and once they did, everything would be fine. And I was wrong, because
I don't think you were
people
totally
of
wrong.
My generation, people of your generation, people that are the anesthesiologists at a major
Hold on, Rachel.
There's a local hospital in Denver that there was an anesthesiologist who said something about Michelle Obama and about her being like monkey faced and speaking in Ebonics this week.
Michelle Obama?
And she makes $350,000 a year.
Rachel, but when you go by the numbers, our generations voted in pretty substantial numbers for Hillary Clinton.
But they did not vote in very substantial
numbers. It was 45 up.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is like, there is a generational divide, yes, for sure.
Well, that's what I'm specifically talking about.
But there's also a lot of people in all the generations that didn't vote this way.
Yes.
A little blind. Sure.
Can I say this?
That's not what I'm trying to get at.
My parents both voted for Hillary and are very much Hillary supporters. And it has been fascinating to me to see the peer pressure that they have been under to stay silent about their support. And I wonder how much, like, they have gotten so much pushback from people that they consider to be in their social network, people that they have considered to be part of their community for 30 and 40 years. And I know we
That's
talk...
That's my point.
And I wonder if we talk about peer pressure when it has to do with kids, but, like...
So why did Trump resonate with older white people so incredibly powerfully?
I think it depends, really, on each person.
Yeah.
I think for me, something we're missing is the element of pride.
Yes.
I think, you know, there's an idea in American culture that if you're poor, it's your fault. You made bad decisions, mm-hmm. and it's your fault. Mm-hmm. And when somebody comes along and tells you it's not your fault, it's somebody else's fault, that is addicting and nothing else mm-hmm. matters.
That's right.
It's pride.
That's absolutely
so correct. Trump's message was it's Mexicans' fault.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. It's populism.
Not convenient scapegoat.
Yeah. It's funny. Yeah. I mean, did you see the story in Alabama where they talked to some of the local farmers? Alabama. They passed a state measure that actually was going to extradite a lot of undocumented people.
Yeah, yeah.
And the farmers were like, I don't know how you're going to eat because we got a crop coming up and
nobody's here.
None of y'all want to come pick this stuff.
Yep.
Like, right. They were on the news saying this. Yes. Like,
yeah. Yes.
And so, I think until people feel that.
Yeah, but they don't live in rural Huntsville and Tuscaloosa.
They don't own a farm.
And the thing is, like, the entire thing is also doublespeak. And I don't know why people don't pick up on this so much more easily, which is, it's not your fault that you haven't done well, but pick yourself up by your bootstraps, and it's up to you, personal responsibility.
Well, that's urban versus rural poverty. Yeah. Let's get that really straight.
But some of that is bullshit too, because the older generation had the GI Bill, and school was way more affordable.
I would like to hypothesize that one of the reasons that Trump appealed to older Americans was the speed of change that we have experienced over the past 2 decades.
I mean, that's the brilliance of Make America Great Again.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think that's not a new phrase. He just kind of modified it a little bit, but it's been around since like the 30s.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think what we really don't honor is that our parents' generation has seen drastic changes in the world around them, in technology and how we communicate, and they feel left out and they feel obsolete and irrelevant. And this guy came along and basically said, you're not irrelevant. We're going to bring you back. Mm-hmm. You're the people in power. You're the ones who are the great America. We're going to take you and make America great again.
And what I think that is so profound is I was one of those people that was like, no, you are obsolete.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, no, I like always thought that was going to be a compelling argument.
To my grandfather, and to those not. People. They are, ultimately.
Yeah.
They are, ultimately. They punched us in the gut this time and said, like, fuck you, we are not yet. But ultimately, you know, the world does move on. We do progress and we do... change happens, and
but what
Trump
in them
is not gonna roll back the fucking internet or like
but
make
what
it
in them
can, cell phones, you know but, what I mean? Or, right. or the fact that like you
well,
know,
it's not that they're Luddites. It's this. I think it has a lot to do with
or the fact that you can't grab your secretary by the pussy. I don't think he's gonna roll that.
No,
back.
But
right,
I wonder what
resentment.
We can. What can
that's,
we?
That's what it's about.
Yeah, and but what can we honor in them? That gets them on our side.
Keeping their fucking health care?
That didn't seem to matter.
But no, I mean...
They
just don't realize
he lied to
it
them.
It will matter.
He told them he's not going to touch their Medicare and their Social Security. He
but
said
I do...
Paul Ryan's
culturally... Culturally...
They're not paying attention.
If you look at cultures that honor... I don't... And I don't mean honoring views. I mean honoring contribution and honoring... Like they're
treating people like they have value.
Yeah. I mean, what
well,
did we
you
miss
know what?
In that?
It's a two-way street.
No, I'm not disagreeing,
but I do wonder if there is a bridge there, if there's something there where if we
I don't know, I'm more prone to go to war.
Well, yeah, no, I really do think I hear what you're saying, Molly.
I don't know if I'm saying it right.
No, I think I do hear what you're saying, which is to try to make it so that it seems like they're not irrelevant now. Because their time has passed, but that their contribution made a change for the better, or that world still exists.
That's fine.
And that they contributed something. And I think what we're talking about, because I really have always hung on this phrase, the make America great again thing, which is like, when was America the greatest? Like, what are you talking about?
Great for whom?
Great for whom? Are we talking, we want to have everything look like happy days?
Yes.
Is that what we're talking about? Because other than that, we're talking about the Vietnam War and water hoses in the streets in the 60s. I guess Woodstock, but I don't think these people would have considered Woodstock.
Well,
but it goes back to the issue of
the 1970s.
You touched on something, though. Like, so we have the greatest generation that came out of World War II. And I think maybe that's what resonated with we'll make America great again, because we honored that generation.
So like right
what they
post-victory in World War II.
They came back and we didn't say, well, war's over.
Fuck
you're
off.
On the streets.
Fuck
we
you.
Honored
said,
them.
Yep. Yeah.
So like right post-World War II, 1947 to 1955,
so
is that...
Combining that great with,
amazing
okay,
period.
You're not going to work in a coal plant anymore, but you gave us energy for how many decades?
Yeah.
Let's honor that.
Well, but these were the fights that people were having in 1968 when the kids with the long hair and the father that was back from World War II said, you know, you can't live in my house. This is different because... You know, yes, the America great and you're not great and you're being left behind by technology, but there's so much white resentment in everything. And that is why I don't see a gap to be bridged. And I'm more ready to fight than to reach out a hand. If it's going to be based on we can't handle the gay people getting married and there's just too many black people on our street and too many Mexicans coming in.
Yeah.
Then it's like, no, fuck you. And we will just get more people on our side and we will win and you will deal with it. And by the way, we'll help you keep your fucking health care because that's what we do as liberals. And unfortunately, on that note, we are out of time. But anybody here who obviously wants to be here, and if you're not local, like Sarah, of course, we're going to have you back.
Why, thank you.
She used her sexy voice. Fantastic.
I'll use my sexy, sick voice.
Yes.
And everybody here has an open seat and is welcome to come on and talk to us
and
anytime.
And thank you so much, all of you, for coming and being with us tonight. We really appreciate
it. It was a pleasure.
And Rip Shepherd book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we had a lot of book recommendations, right?
No. Mm-hmm. Shepherd from Firefly.
This week.
Because it's 2016, so why not?
Wrong glass.
Why not?
Yeah.
Okay, everybody, stay active, stay tuned, stay involved, hang in there, try to tolerate your parents at Christmas time.
Good luck.
We'll see you before then.
Adios. Bye. Zero.